Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport, the exclusive rights holders for television in the UK of the Australian Open. And we have got one of Eurosport's big stars with us here, of course, because Catherine Whittaker joins me, David Law, who's part of the Five Live team, who's been commentating on the matches today. Catherine, how's your day been? Day two at the Australian Open. Headlines: Novak Djokovic has beaten Fernando Verdasco. Britain has five players through to the second round of the Australian Open. First time in 30 years that has happened, with Heather Watson and Johanna Konta and, of course, Kyle Edmund joining Dan Evans and Andy Murray. We nearly had six, with Naomi Brody narrowly losing out to Daria Gavrilova. So it's been a bit of an eventful day.
Yeah, and I think the greatest thing about that stat is that it doesn't feel like a massive surprise and a massive deal anymore, and that's fantastic. You know, yeah, we should be getting five players through to the second round. I suppose the only real surprise in that bunch was Heather Watson. I don't even think that was that much of a surprise. You know, we know how susceptible Sam Stosur is. I find something a little bit sad and uncomfortable about watching Sam Stosur play at her home Grand Slam, because she's such a nice person and a good ambassador for the sport, and it's awkward seeing somebody look uncomfortable on their home stage, which she kind of always has. But Heather Watson still had to play very, very well and really keep her head in some very difficult conditions to beat her. So yeah, perhaps that's the only semi-surprise, but it's deserved and almost expected.
Yeah, I agree with you about the strange atmosphere. I was commentating on that match between Watson and Stosur, and then I also commentated on Brody against Gavrilova. Very different atmosphere in that match. There was all this expectation and fun and excitement about Gavrilova, and there was a sort of slight awkwardness about Stosur, as though people didn't really want to look, as though they knew what was coming. It was inevitable. They'd seen her 17 times. She'd never got beyond the second week. Twice, I think, she got to the fourth round, but that's as well as she'd done. But, you know, huge credit to Watson, because Watson's had a pretty tough time over the last year and a half. She's lost here last year to Tomeya Babosh in three sets from being a setup, and she held it together. I mean, you spoke to her afterwards, and what sort of mood was she in? Well, delighted, of course, but, what did she think of the way she'd done?
Yeah, well, we both spoke to her afterwards, in fact. I think you did a slightly longer, sort of more reflective piece. I did sort of, you know, more of a reaction interview and looking forward. And yeah, I mean, she's very much heart on the sleeve, isn't she? And yeah, she was delighted. She's very open about how she struggled a little bit for motivation in the latter part of that season. She was asked in her press conference, and I picked up a little bit on it in my interview with her, about why she does well in this portion of the year. You know, she's had a run here before, I think in 2013, and she won Hobart a couple of years ago, and she said, well, it's the beginning of the year and I'm fresh. And, you know, parallels can be drawn with Dan Evans, who doesn't do brilliantly with long stretches on the road and the grind of tour life. And I think she was hinting at kind of the same thing, you know, not necessarily a homesickness, which is what, you know, Dan Evans just misses Solihull sometimes, David.
Don't we all?
Which I'm sure you can relate to. Yeah, but with Heather, I think it's just that grind of tour life. Sometimes she isn't always up for that. And I think that's okay, you know. I can understand that. You know, there's many upsides, but there are downsides as well. And it's different folks, different strokes. So, yeah, she was very open and, chuffed to bits, really. And I think chuffed to be a part of this big British success. I think by the sounds of it, it was probably hard for her in New York when there were great British results as well. We were recording similar podcasts to this about great British success and she wasn't part of it. So I think this means a lot to her.
I think it does. We should say as well, we're sitting currently in Garden Square, which is where we were last night. As you can tell, it's rather noisier, or certainly the last 10 minutes have been of this podcast, because of the big screen. Basically, the Agnieszka Radwańska match has just finished with Radwańska beating Svetlana Peronkova in three tight sets. And so when everybody's leaving, And we can see them all filtering past us at the moment. They have the big screen on. They have the sort of music and so forth. It looks like they've turned it off. So well done on taking the plug out, Catherine, because that was annoying me. Now, Novak Djokovic, we saw earlier on this evening. It was a funny old match he had with Fernando Verdasco. On paper, it was two very straightforward sets for Djokovic, one really tight one in the second. I watched quite a lot of it on TV, and I thought Djokovic was really good in the first set. He went 5-love ahead, but then in the second set, it was just a mess of a match. I mean, they were almost falling over each other to let the other one win. Neither one found any sort of form. There were, particularly Verdasco, was incredibly ratty. He was really irritated by everything. He was having a go at his own team. I don't know whether it was all sort of self-directed or what, but he wasn't happy out there at all, and Djokovic fairly comfortably in the end, although he had his serve broken two or three times in that set as well. So not vintage, really.
Definitely not vintage, but I think fine for an opening match. He obviously got the memo about making me look good with my prediction for that match, didn't he? One tight set, but basically a pretty straightforward outing. Thanks, Novak. Do you know what? I think the rattiness, that's a good word for it, of Fernando Verdasco was particularly interesting and particularly telling for me, because I don't think he would have been that ratty had it not for what happened in Doha. Had they not met in Doha and had the match that they'd had with Verdasco having the five set points, he would have gone into today's match as the underdog, the flashy underdog that everybody knows is capable of something on his day, but really didn't have anything to prove. Today he went into the match as somebody actually with expectation on his shoulders, actually that people were expecting to really push the world number two, the six-time champion here. And that was a very, very different mindset for him. You know, he was killing himself for every mistake, wasn't he? He was really being hard on himself. So, and that's, I guess in hindsight, it's easier to articulate it than it was, you know, in advance of the match. That's kind of what I thought would happen, play out for each of them mentally. It would give Djokovic something to prove and something to say, and it would give Verdasco a bit of extra pressure he wouldn't have had were it not for that semi-final in Doha. So, yeah, I mean, without sounding overly smug about it, it's,
well, you're not doing a very good job, are you?
Sort of played out similarly to how I'd expected, except you're right, in a slightly more bizarre way. That second set wasn't necessarily, it might have been in scoreline what I was expecting one of the sets to be, but it was a bizarre set of tennis, and it looked like Djokovic was mistiming the ball a bit, which is what Murray and Federer was doing early on, but then it improved throughout the match, you know, and we've sort of been attributing that to the different balls this year that are flying differently through the air, and it's very understandable that the players would be mistiming the ball and getting used to it as the match goes on. But for Djokovic, it was like he was timing the ball sweetly in the first set and then it sort of disappeared. So that was a little bit of a bizarre pattern. But as much as it wasn't a vintage performance, I don't think there's any concern for Djokovic fans at this stage.
No, maybe not. And I agree with you. I mean, they have to get this first match out of the way, don't they? And we saw the same with Murray on day one. He was anything but his best, but he got the job done. We'll be hearing from Andy Murray a little bit later in the tennis podcast, looking ahead to his second round match. Catherine has been speaking to him exclusively for Eurosport. We get to play that for you on the podcast here, so we're looking forward to that. Now, on the subject of talking to players, and obviously Novak Djokovic winning through today, we wanted to play you a little bit of a press conference exchange that I had with Novak Djokovic, and it was in relation to the situation of him breaking up with Boris Becker. Now, this is the conversation that Novak Djokovic and I had.
When it was announced that you and Boris were going to go your separate ways, Boris did an interview in which he said that perhaps you haven't been working as hard in the recent months as you had earlier on in your career. Do you think that that is accurate? And if so, do you think that has changed now?
Boris and I have had an incredible 3 years, and I can't be more grateful to him and to our partnership relationship than I am. We've had amazing success, and that's all I can say. You know, I don't want to go back and comment on anything. I kept a very friendly relationship with Boris. We just went separate ways.
So that's Novak Djokovic absolutely having none of it. He was not going to get drawn into what went on with Boris Becker and why Boris said that maybe he wasn't working hard enough. So we decided to double team them. Catherine has been speaking to Boris Becker.
Now, after you and Novak went your separate ways at the end of last year, you gave an interview and you said that perhaps after he won that incredible French Open title, he was struggling a little bit for motivation, wasn't working as hard on the court as he had done beforehand. Do you think that's still the case? Do you see that motivation, that fire back in his eye now this year?
Well, last year was last year and this year is this year, so I don't really want to dwell too much on the past. Obviously, I know him very well. But what I've seen in Doha, what I've seen in practice here this week, he looks good, he looks rejuvenated, he looks fresh. But it doesn't matter how long we speak about it, the truth lies on the court. And the matchup is tough, but I'm sure he knows what to do. He's got his backup team with him that's been with him for a long time. So I'm sure he'll be all right.
So he's not having any of it either, Catherine. He wasn't going in on the what happened with Novak line in the second half of the year last year. Did you get anything off mic, maybe, about it that we can just sort of share with the listeners about what went on?
I'd love to say that I had, and I honestly would tell you if I had, or at least sort of hint at it, but really, no. I mean, this is purely hypothesis, but I suspect that given how loose-lipped Boris was in the immediate aftermath of their breakup, with him giving that interview to Sky and saying what he said, that you pressed Djokovic on in that press conference completely legitimately, I suspect that they might have had a little bit of a conversation and agreed sort of a general party line about what to say when asked about that. And, you know, they have a relationship. I genuinely do get the impression that they have ended on good terms. I certainly do believe each of them when they say that, but I think those good terms also suggest that there might be a certain amount of collusion about, you know, a party line.
And, I'm sure there was. Yeah. I'm sure. I wouldn't mind a bet that Djokovic said to him after he heard that, "Do you mind not saying stuff like that?"
Well,
really,
exactly.
I mean, I could do without that.
Exactly. I mean, Boris, he gave me a very good interview. It was, you know, he said interesting things, but he didn't say anything revealing about Djokovic. He didn't say anything really, really, you know, he knows things. You know, I asked him, it was mostly an interview to preview that Verdasco Djokovic match. And, you know, I asked him if you were coaching against Djokovic tonight, if you were in Verdasco's corner, what weaknesses would you be telling Verdasco to exploit? And he wasn't having any of that. You know, he gave an interesting answer, don't get me wrong. He's got plenty to say without giving Djokovic's secrets away. But he's definitely not going to be giving any of Djokovic's secrets away.
Drat. How annoying.
When was the last time anyone hurt anyone, say drat. That's amazing.
Well, I was going to say something else, but then I'd have to put one of those explicit content signs on the podcast, and I don't like that.
You don't have to put explicit content signs on for drat.
Hence why I used it, Catherine Whittaker. You see, I got my point across. I've made Catherine smile. She's laughing under the midnight sky. And my goodness, actually looking up at that sky, you're right about those pterodactyls you told us about last night. It is a dinosaur haven up above our heads. Now, they're seagulls, aren't they, Catherine? I think they're seagulls. I think there's some bats up
seagulls,
there as well.
Seagulls, yeah, with a smattering of bats. So long as they're not mosquitoes, we're fine.
We are. Okay, we're almost deserted out here now as well. So what else has happened? About 14 hours ago, you were here to watch Johanna Konta. That's the kind of days. It is actually 14 hours ago that Johanna Konta started against her Kirsten Flipkin. She won 7-5, 6-2. Did you see any of that? Did you speak to her?
I spoke to her twice, actually. I spoke to her.
A bit greedy.
Yeah. Immediately after the match, we call it a flash interview, which is, you know, they step straight off court, you know, laden with sweat, and they're made to speak to me. Also laden with sweat, it has to be said, on a day like today. And then after they've been for their shower and everything and come to their press conference, I get to do a sort of slightly more considered, reflective interview with them after that, as do you, or Russell Fuller of Five Live, usually. And she was, you know, the buzzword, the word on everyone's mind was conditions. You know, it was brutal today, and she had the worst.
Describe them. What is it like?
Oppressive, completely oppressive, exactly the same conditions that she effectively had a panic attack in New York. She didn't quite use those words, but heavily hinted in that direction. The humidity upped today significantly, as well as the heat. It has to be said, there's been that, they call it a cool change, don't they, here in Melbourne. It's a very pleasant temperature just now.
It's going to be cold tomorrow, isn't it? So it is actually going to be cold. It was 99 degrees Fahrenheit. It's going to be 60-something tomorrow. You know, it's basically halving.
It is a quite absurd climate they have here in the city. It's amazing. But anyway, she just wasn't having any of the conditions thing. She was like, yeah, it's fine. It's a tennis match. And she does look like one of the fittest human beings out there. I mean, I know there's a lot of fit individuals in sport and in tennis, but she really does look like a physical machine, I think. And I think what happened in New York was more a physical reaction, a mental reaction to physical conditions. I'm not saying the conditions weren't a contributing factor, but I do get the feeling that that was a panic attack type thing, and not any indication of any physical deficiency, because she's an iron woman, and Flipkins is tricky. She's a really unideal first round opponent, I think, because she makes you uncomfortable. She might not have the weapons, but she really makes you uncomfortable. She slices and dices and doesn't give you any rhythm. And I was very impressed with how cool-headed Konta was after a sort of few early nerves. There was definitely a hint of that, completely understandable. She was professional and impressive, I thought.
She was. I quite enjoyed your reference to the match from 2004 that you said on Twitter. You don't tweet very often, Catherine, but when you do, you make it worth it. And it was between Dmitry Tursunov against Radek Stepanek. Been about 80 years between them, and it was won by Stepanek in straight sets. Did you go and watch?
I didn't go and watch. I did keep an eye on it, though. Stepanek came through qualifying, didn't he? And Tursunov's using a protected ranking as a result of injury. But, I mean, yeah, they should get sort of some sort of award or be given some sort of separate trophy of, you know, some sort.
Still dragging themselves on.
Both of those two were having matches, you know, when I first got into tennis, really. It's amazing.
Yeah, indeed.
Makes me feel young. Thank you both Stepanek and Tursunov.
Doesn't make me feel young. But anyway, that's not relevant. Can we talk about a couple of people taller than me? Riley Opelka is 6 feet 11 inches tall, nearly 7 feet tall. He's about 19 years of age, and he took David Goffin to five sets, very nearly beat him, but Goffin went through. And we have to have a mention for Ivo Karlovic, don't we? 22-20, he beat Horacio Zaballos in the final set. And wonderful scenes out there. I mean, more than 5 hours long, that match. 2.5 hour final set. And Ivo Karlovic, I reckon he's hitting the nightclubs tonight.
Do you?
I do, yeah.
If he can get through the
I said that in my commentary. He was high-fiving everybody in the crowd. And basically, anybody who'd stayed, he high-fived. And I thought, you know, he's having a good night tonight.
I don't want to take anything away from Ivo Karlovic, because it was a fantastic win. I wish I'd been out there. That's just one of those moments, isn't it? As sort of everybody that managed to get out to... Was it court 20? I think it was court 20. Same court, in fact, that Stepanek and Tursunov were out on. It's the old man's court, isn't it? Anyway. Yeah, everyone out there seemed to be having a grand old time. But I did just... I refer you to a text I just this second received from my dad saying... on the topic of serving first in the final set, which is a topic that is particularly close to my heart because I think it's too great an advantage in a no tiebreak fifth set situation.
How come you never win when you put serve
first? Karlovic adds one data point to the Catherine Whittaker hypothesis.
I see. Thanks to Catherine's dad for that one. In the women's draw, Karolina Pliskova won easily, 6-2, 6-love. Agnieszka Radwanska, we've given you her score. Serena Williams beat Belinda Bencic, 6-4, 6-3, relatively straightforward. That one, Caroline Wozniacki was a good winner, as was Sibyl Kova. Osaka won through, so we're going to get the Osaka against Konta match. Smile comes on Catherine Whittaker's face, as I mentioned, Naomi Osaka, your favourite player.
She only just won through, didn't she? She had to really battle against Luxika.
Who are you going to support in that one, then? Konta, I mean, you know, she's British against Osaka. Or are you misobjective?
I'm a professional neutral, David. But with my tennis fan head on, that is tough. Because I really do like... I like Jo Konta, aside from my Britishness. I have immense respect for her. She's a mystery and a marvel to me. I don't think I fully understand her. I'm not sure anybody does. And that creates a whole lot of intrigue. She's incredible in ways that I don't quite understand. And Osaka, I've banged on about for seemingly years now, but she's only about 14. So it can't be you.
She's 18, but she's exciting and you like her, and she's kind of sweet, isn't she? Because she's fun.
Everyone likes her. Interestingly, her Japanese, by all accounts, has come on leaps and bounds. I've talked a lot about how she's desperately trying to learn Japanese because there's this bandwagon of about 35 travelling Japanese journalists that always want to speak to her, and she's really working at it. It sounds like by the week, by the month, there's, you know, noticeable improvement. So good on her.
Excellent. So you knew all about... You just knew it had come on because of your extensive Japanese past and history. Yeah, Catherine, where to go there. So, it's been a cracking day too.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
So day three, Catherine, and Andy Murray's going to be back on the Rod Laver Arena. He gets top billing this time, second on against Andrei Rublev. And he was speaking to Catherine exclusively on Eurosport yesterday to look forward to that match against Rublev. And Catherine asked him how he felt before stepping out onto the court at the start of the Australian Open here and whether it was a question of mixed emotions given his five ultimately unsuccessful finals.
You know, I felt nerves before I went on, like I do before any slam. You know, first rounds are always tough. But no, I don't have mixed emotions in terms of, you know, I feel very positive about this event. I played some of my best tennis over the years here. You know, not many players have reached five finals, although I wish I'd won one of them. You know, I have had a really good record here, so I like it. I like the conditions, and yeah, just didn't quite play my best today.
Your first match, Grand Slam match as a world number one, you're being asked about it constantly. You seem to be maintaining your focus, your motivation brilliantly. Is that something Ivan is helping with a lot? Obviously, he's been to world number one and he knows what it takes to stay there.
Yeah, I think it helps, obviously, having someone that's been in that position before. And you know, it took me a long time to get there, and it's just having someone like him to chat about kind of how to try to stay there. You know, that you need to keep getting better. You can't just sort of accept where you are and where your game's at because everyone else is now, you know, trying to get better than you. You know, so I need to keep improving, keep focused, and you know, not take anything for granted. You know, just because you're ranked number one doesn't guarantee you wins. You know, you need to go out there, you know, and fight hard and suffer in tough conditions here. And I had to do that today.
Well, the next immediate challenge, Andrei Rublev, of course, one of the crop of talked about youngsters. Have you ever hit with him? I know you've never played him in a professional match. And if not, what do you know about him? What are you expecting?
Yeah, I've seen him play a couple of times. He's a big hitter of the ball. You know, he's quite slight in his build, but he really goes for it. He's got great timing, solid technique. So, yeah, he's got a lot of potential. He's obviously starting to make his breakthrough now, qualifying here and winning his first round. So, it'll be a good match. And yeah, I'll need to work a few things out when I get out there. So I've never played against him before. I'll watch a few videos to try and see what he likes to do, and yeah, just need to get a bit of a feel for it when I'm out there.
Well, good luck. Go well.
Thank you.
So Andy Murray with plenty to say, as usual, to Catherine in that interview on Eurosport. What was his mood like?
Really good, actually. He was really relaxed. He was anxious. Not anxious. I mean, he's always incredibly considered and generous with his time, but he said at the beginning of the interview he asked how many questions there were going to be because the room was so air conditioned and he hadn't had his ice bath yet, and he was so diligently wanting to make sure that, you know, he completed his recovery process perfectly. And in fact, really interestingly, well, maybe it's only interesting to a massive tennis geek, but during the press conference he was asked by, I think, Carol Bouchard, actually, former guest on the tennis podcast, about how he was fiddling and looking inquisitively at the label of a drink of a water bottle on the court during the match. And he said what he was trying to look on the water bottle what volume of water it was, because he'd so that he could accurately gauge how much of it to consume, because he has a strict regime of how much water he should consume according to exactly what temperature it is and exactly what percentage humidity it is, which is, and how frequently he should consume that amount of water, whatever it is. So, I mean, that's just a little insight there into the precision and the science behind an elite sportsman like Andy Murray, isn't it? That, I mean, and he said it in the way of like, yeah, I mean, obviously that's what I do. And everyone in the room was like, crikey, can you imagine having to, you know, measure your water consumption before doing so? But anyway, he was in good spirits, and I think he will be as talented as Rublev is. I think he's going to be pretty confident. Yes, he talked about how he's a gutsy player that will go for his shots, but he's, I think perhaps why he hasn't come on in the way that Zverev or Kyrgios have come on is that he hasn't come on physically. He still looks like a boy rather than a man, which I suppose you could probably level at Zverev, although he's making strides in that department and he's so tall that it sort of compensates. But I think he'll be fine. I think Rublev's an interesting one. He's managed, his agent is the same agent that John McEnroe's agent. McEnroe, incidentally, beautiful segue, is commentating on the Murray-Rublev match tomorrow evening for Eurosport. I think it's his first commentary of the tournament for Eurosport. And John and Andre Rublev's agent was in the Eurosport offices earlier, and I was just asking him about Rublev because he's been working with him for quite some time. He was somebody that was talent spotted, you know, years ago and snapped up and has been, you know, nurtured in the way that these talents are. And he's moved to Barcelona. He's training alongside Karen Khachanov, who's another much talked about Russian with loads of talent, you know, under the nurturing of Gallo Blanco. And I said, you know, is he a good kid with a good head on his shoulders? And he hesitated for a minute and he said, yeah, but he's not too good a kid, you know. He's got something about him. He's got the attitude. And if you look at, you know, I mentioned them earlier, Zverev and Kyrgios, what are they not lacking in attitude? You know, it seems to be a kind of crucial ingredient, doesn't it?
I have to say, though, Andy Murray does quite like playing these kids and putting them in their place. It seems to be one of his hobbies, because I remember when he played Borna Coric when he was just, 17 at the Davis Cup 2 or 3 years ago, and in the press conference, Andy Murray was asked, do you think Borna will... He was asked by one of the Croatian journalists, do you think Borna will enjoy this and get a lot out of it as an experience? And Andy just sort of stared at him and said, well, he's not going to enjoy it. He won't enjoy it. And sure enough, in the first game, there was a 57-stroke rally that Andy Murray subjected this kid to, which actually Borna Coric managed to win. He was not the same player again after it. So, he'll enjoy it. He'll try to teach this lad a few things on the court, and I dare say he will. I think it could be quite one-sided myself, that one. What else have we got tomorrow? We've got Venus Williams starting the day off on the Rod Laver Arena, followed by Angelique Kerber against Karina Witthoft, so two Germans there. Roger Federer then against Noah Rubin, the young American, in the afternoon. In the evening, it's Samantha Crawford against Garbiñe Muguruza, Andy Murray then against Rublev, and on the Margaret Court Arena, we've got Stan Wawrinka in action, we've got Ash Barty, the Australian who gets talked about so much. Kei Nishikori's on the Hisense Arena, as is Eugenie Bouchard. And where's Dan Evans? Let's see. He's on court number three. He is fourth on against Marin Cilic. Is he going to win?
I think he's got a chance. I'm not going to predict he'll win. Marin Cilic is a heavy favourite. He's got a chance, though. Definitely got a chance.
That's the way. Quite right. Catherine Whittaker here on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport, who will be covering the tournament, of course, tomorrow live, as will BBC Radio 5 Live. Sports Extra will have commentary of Evans as well. I can't wait. So I'm already looking forward to it. It's already tomorrow.
He is. I asked him about this yesterday. He is galvanising quite a lot of support in this part of the world, Evans. You know, as much as he's sort of slightly awkward, bizarre individual in some ways, people really warm to him.
It's hard not to, isn't it?
When you're from Solihull.
Yeah, we're all like that, I tell you. Come to Solihull. Everybody's like Dan Evans and me. Anyway, Catherine Whittaker, we've got to go to bed now. It's time for bed. Time to go and prepare for tomorrow. Hope you've all enjoyed the show. Hope you've enjoyed the tennis for the first 2 days. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.